to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get at it. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. It is Tuesday, December 3rd, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Got a busy hour coming up. Daily Flames Roundtable later on this hour. Wes Gilbertson and Derek Wills will join us on our Daily Flames Roundtable. But it is a Tuesday, which means it's time to kick off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, Amazon, and more. Mr. Saravalli, how are you, my friend? How are we doing on this Tuesday?
Pretty good, Pat. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, looking forward to what is going to be a really emotional night here Tuesday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Pregame tribute and pregame pregame appreciation of the Gaudreau family here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. So we are looking forward to being a part of what should be a really memorable night here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Maybe before we dive in on some of the nitty gritty around the league, I'm just curious to your thoughts on just how, now that we're about 3 months removed from the passing of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau, just a reflection on how the hockey community has really kind of outpoured their emotion and their support to the Gaudreau family over the last number of months.
Yeah, to be honest, I really don't know how the Columbus Blue Jackets and their players have done it. I mean,
yeah,
it feels like, look, Johnny's always going to be with them, and his jersey, it obviously travels with them, and they've got a stall set up and all that. It's so difficult. It's so heavy. It's really hard. And then those players and their staff and everyone there deserves a ton of recognition for just the support that they've put behind the Gaudreau family. And same thing with people in Calgary. The first thing I think about is the vigil that followed the thousands of fans that came outside the dome to pay their respects and the different tributes and murals and everything else that was there in Calgary. And look, I think another part of this too is just the Gaudreau family itself having the strength to come out to Calgary and be recognized and to share in that. It takes really special people to do that and to, just to want to even be in the public setting, after something so personal, so tragic. I think it says a lot about them as a family. Look, just even seeing some of the scenes, a photo today of Lanny and, mm-hmm. and Guy Gaudreau having a word before morning skate and Guy, being out there and using one of Johnny's sticks that the equipment staff found, it hits me, and I'm not there. So to be there in the building tonight, it's gonna be something.
Yep. And then there's the hockey part of what's happening here in Calgary. And for the first time since joining the Flames in late January of 2024, Andrei Kuzmenko is going to get the healthy scratch treatment. He will not play Tuesday versus Columbus. Just the one goal in 25 games for Kuzmenko. It's been a disastrous year. He has not scored or even registered a point in 9 consecutive games. Frank, Where does this go from here with Kuzmenko? They've tried a lot of different things to try to get him going. Hasn't worked. Now they're going down the healthy scratch road. Like, what's your read on where things go from here as what has been a disastrous second campaign for Kuzmenko in Calgary continues?
Well, where it's going is the clock is ticking on his tenure as a Flame. I mean, that's the long and short of it. Look, there's a reason why the trade kind of took a little bit longer to piece together last year, bringing him over from Vancouver. And part of that was a kind of two-day process where they really tried to convince Kuzmenko that this was a solid place to go to waive his no trade at the time. And I think there was certainly some hesitancy. I think the opportunity he was excited about. But this is someone that I think probably needs to be in a different environment, more comfortable with his surroundings, with the players that he's playing with. I don't know why it isn't a fit. I can't, you know, put my finger on it, but I think in the long run, this probably ends up being a player that the Flames end up moving on from in some way.
At this point, probably he's going to need to ramp up his productivity and effectiveness if there's going to be a viable trade in place. Is the
I don't
NHL?
Think so.
No, you think that they could still find some trade value for him between now and the deadline?
No, I didn't say value, but could they find a taker? Yeah. Look, this guy was put up some decent numbers at some point, and it's just not working. So, you know, would a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins take on Kuzmenko? Look at what they're doing with Phil Tomasino. Don't trade much to get him, but they're willing to try out some players that have some pedigree that they could find to plug in and give some opportunity to and see what happens. So, yeah, I think the value part, unless he just starts producing out of the clear blue sky, that ship has probably sailed. But can they move on? Yes, I think the answer is yes.
Okay. There's been some talk or some suggestion that, you know, maybe the NHL next year isn't a guarantee, that maybe a return to Russia might be in the cards as well. Is that something you see happening with Kuzmenko potentially?
It would be disappointing. I mean, look, I would never begrudge any player going home, not for one second, but it's clear that there's some real talent, that this could be a guy that could be a productive, really productive NHL player, the way that he burst onto the scene in Vancouver. And I know that, you know, the coaching staff had kind of gotten frustrated with him at some point, and he was a player that they wanted to see, like anything, a more complete game. But I think as a whole, and we can have this discussion on another day, but we've got to get back to a spot where, and I'm not saying the Flames are guilty of this, but as a whole in the league, we've got to get back to a spot where we can, you know, harness and celebrate the things that players do well, instead of trying to make sure that they fit into a certain box, because I just think you end up spinning your wheels.
You think that's part of why it hasn't maybe worked here in Calgary with Kuzmenko?
Probably attention to detail, work ethic, probably a lot of things that have gone into it. Yeah, I think that the frustration becomes apparent on both sides.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The Flames have lost the four in a row that they're currently in the midst of right now. They've fallen back to the pack a little bit in the Western Conference. You've got Dan Vladar as your number 14 target on your latest trade targets list that came out a couple of weeks ago. That was the only Flames player on the list. Do you anticipate more names maybe entering the conversation if they continue falling back to the pack and you know, maybe where they were in the first quarter of the season becomes a little bit more of a tooth and nail battle?
And they had to start doing that as soon as I declared last week that this is a team that's going to make the playoffs,
of course, right?
I mean, it's always the way it works. Yeah, look, here's what I'll say. I don't think the Flames want to go down that path. I think at a certain point they may have to consider that. And I think Rasmus Anderson is a great example. I don't think the Flames really have any interest at all in moving him. Mm-hmm. But if they get to a spot where they're well out of the playoff mix in mid to late February, and there's no glimmer of hope to get back in, and teams are calling on, look, I'd say it's a relatively thin defense market. Like, I know that there are names on my board that are defensemen, and one's already been traded in David Juracek, but we had four lefties, four righties, all different kinds of different acquisition costs, different player types, all those things. I don't think anyone really rises to the level that Rasmus Anderson would bring. And on top of that, you're talking about a guy that is, you know, playing his best hockey that he's played. So they may have to consider something like that if someone comes knocking with the right price. But it would have to be pretty expensive, I think, in order to get Craig Conroy and his team to blink.
Hey, do you have any feel as to, and I know that the rosters get announced on Wednesday, do you have any feel as to where a guy like Mackenzie Weegar or Michael Backlund or Rasmus Anderson might be sitting when it comes to being named for their respective countries for the Four Nations on Wednesday?
I would think that Rasmus Anderson is as close as you could get to a lock among that group. I think Backlund was right on the edge, the border of it. But I think when you look at his body of work and his, what he brings, you know, in terms of a different element to, you know, some view as all-star teams, plus the leadership capability, I think he's probably got a really strong chance to be on that team. And Weegar is right there, right in the mix. You know, I've seen a million different projections. I know Team Canada really liked what he brings. I think he was kind of in that last group competing with guys like Travis Sanheim, who played for the Hitmen. Which way it goes, I don't, to be totally honest and candid, don't know. But I'd say he's right there.
Okay. We're talking with Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. What's your overall sense of the buzz of the Four Nations, the excitement for rosters, excitement for the actual event when it starts being played in February? What's your feel on the buzz as this gets played for the first time? We're going through this event for the first time.
Well, the problem with it, if there is one, is that it is the first time and unfortunately will be the last time because they're probably not going to do something like this again. And that's one thing that I think hurts the event, is that there's not really any history to it. It's not a full-fledged international field because it doesn't include Russia for geopolitical reasons and also just for pure scheduling purposes. Like, you can't have a crazy big tournament unfold over an 11-day span. That said, I can't wait. Like, I'm all for it because I think, first off, it's such a better alternative to All-Star Weekend. And second, it's been way too long since we've had any best-on-best competition. The fact that we are, you know, Connor McDavid is, you know, approaching his late 20s now and hasn't yet put on a Team Canada jersey in best-on-best play, like, that is unforgivable for one of the best players of all time. So I think it's a nice compromise. I think from a marketing perspective, it's a little bit more difficult because it's not steeped in history and it's a one-time thing. But I can tell you also anecdotally from just traffic on our Daily Faceoff website, Four Nations roster projections and Four Nations talk is some of the most popular stuff that we've done all year. So, It's been really good from that angle.
Okay. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't think I would be overly interested or overly excited, and yet I'm actually kind of buzzing to see the way the rosters get announced, and I'm curious to see what it all looks like when this thing starts getting played in February. So I'm starting to get a little buzz for it too, just even personally, and I wasn't necessarily expecting that.
So here's one more thing too, and this is, I'm going to wave my red, white, and blue flag for a minute. And if Craig Conroy is listening, I don't mean any offense. This is also going to be the best Team USA roster that's ever been entered into an international tournament. So with all due respect to those 1996 World Cup of Hockey guys who were generation defining, even the 2002 and 2010 Olympic teams, they don't hold a candle to the strength and depth of this team. So that alone, from a U.S.-Canada perspective, Saturday night, just after Valentine's Day in Montreal, I mean, I can't, like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else on the planet.
Do you remember the results in 2002 and 2010? I forget who was polishing a silver medal after. I can't remember. Do you remember at all?
No, I must have forgot. I was too busy thinking about the 1996 World Cup of Hockey. Sorry.
Fair enough. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. Let's move to some of the NHL pieces of news that have circulated through over the last 4 or 5 days. Starting with that trade between Minnesota and Columbus, and you know, when we asked you about David Yurecek last week, you said the front runner is the Minnesota Wild, and that's where he ends up over the weekend. Were you anticipating the package for Yurecek that Columbus got in return to be as substantial as it ended up being? What was that, 4 picks and a prospect for Yurecek? I'm just curious as to your reaction as to the price Minnesota paid for him.
I honestly don't. This is going to sound funny, and it goes against the grain of a lot of what I saw on social media. I don't want to say it's insignificant, but I don't really view it as that much, and I'll explain why.
Okay.
You've got a first-round pick that this year, in what many believe is a below-average draft class, is going to fall somewhere in the low 20s, probably. So let's say anywhere from 18 to 24. And then you're giving up a second, third, and a fourth, plus a B-level prospect in Damon Hunt. In any normal year, had you lost all season long and then went to a team and said, hey, I want to acquire the number 6 overall pick from you, and they said it's only going to take, let's call it 22 or 23 overall, plus second, third, and fourth picks. What, like, aren't you doing that in a second?
Especially if I'm the Wild building what I'm building. Yeah.
Well, that plus, here's the other part of the other dynamic of the trade, is we now have 2 additional years of information and knowledge on Yurecek. This is someone that obviously they would have been really high in the draft year on his talent, but then to be able to follow him closely for 2 seasons now and gain more information, this is more valuable than picking someone that's number 6 overall. And so now when you look at the right side of their blue line moving forward, to me, the fact that the Minnesota Wild didn't have to give up Zeev Bouyam, Marco Rossi, or obviously the untouchable Brock Faber, and now you can put Faber and, for the long haul, David Yurecek on the right side of your blue line, a couple guys 22 and under, 23 and under, they're set for the next 10 years. So I'm looking at them saying, I understand every part of that trade.
Yep. Colorado makes that deal. They acquire Scott Wedgwood from Nashville, and I know there had been lots of talk about how that might stabilize or solve their goaltending situation. Am I wrong to be a little skeptical on that front? Like, does
no.
Wedgwood coming in move the needle all that much for what has been the league's biggest black hole between the pipes this year? Like, I was a little skeptical of some of the articles I was reading out of Denver about how big a deal this was for Colorado. And that's why I'm asking on the outside, honestly, like, how much does Wedgwood move the needle in Denver?
Not much for me. I mean, I think he's a temporary 2 to 3 week stopgap, someone that you could, pardon the pun, wedge into your lineup and use for a few weeks until you can get Alexander Georgiev hopefully to find his feet under him. Like, they're one team, and I'll throw another at you, the Carolina Hurricanes, that I think could really use someone like Dan Vladar, mm-hmm. where the Flames could be trading from a position of strength from, where I think Vladar is eminently capable of giving you a lot more than that. And I think the price point is relatively reasonable. And same thing with the cap hit. Plus, if you want to keep him, you can re-sign him. Like, that'd be the guy that I'd be going after if I'm Chris McFarland in Colorado. Like, I'd want to, at least if I'm going to take the bat off my shoulder, make it a hearty swing and someone that I feel like I can trust.
Yep. And there's still, I guess, time for them to do that. Plenty of time between now and the trade deadline.
But why now? Like, so now let's say if they go out and do it again.
Yep.
Now you've given up your 24-year-old goalie that you felt really confident. Like, I rewind back to 6 months ago and the conversations that I had with the Colorado staff, they were really excited and big believers in Eustace Annanen. Now his confidence has been shattered. He's been thrust into some situations that, frankly, he didn't deserve. And now he's property of the Nashville Predators in a deal that you can't really undo. And the Preds are looking at it going, I could get myself a Scott Wedgwood any year on the open market as a free agent. Sure, I'll trade you Scott Wedgwood, and I'll take the 24-year-old goalie that I believe with my goaltending staff led by Mitch Korn, I can rehab his game and his confidence, and he can be my new Askarov.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one. I was a little confused at that move from Colorado, but I guess we'll see how it plays out. The last stop I wanted to throw at you is Madison Square Garden and New York City. There's all kinds of talk about big changes coming for that Rangers team, a Rangers team that had an incredible year last year, but you know are definitely struggling by their standards right now. Like, how much concern is there inside that front office? How much concern should there be, and what type of changes might we actually be looking at on Broadway?
I think there's a lot of concern, and I think just about everything's on the table. I would make the argument that I think a coaching change doesn't make any sense when you've had a couple coaches now have a really short tenure and short leash. It can't all be on the coach. I think they recognize that at this point. Attention to detail, details within games, awareness. Those are things that a coach can preach, but it's on the players to listen. And when you've seen it now over multiple iterations and players making some of the same mistakes over and over again, that's a concern. I think part of the issue is everyone knows and has watched the struggle. And I'll offer one more thing. I think this is probably the best litmus test that we've had in terms of the new generation of players. I don't think they're gonna respond to things like what Chris Drury did last week in sending out a memo to all 31 other teams and saying he's open for business, but not only that, but naming two heart and soul players for his team and his captain Jacob Trouba and an all-time Ranger and lifelong Ranger and Chris Kreider. That stuff might have worked when Chris Drury played. It might have worked when Craig Conroy played. I don't think it would work now. And I think what we're seeing is a real rebuke from the Rangers, who many have looked at and watched last night's game and felt that they checked out and said, maybe that's kind of gone the other way. If you're looking to give your team a jolt, and not saying that he sent that out inauthentically or that he's not actually open to trading those players, just that I think when you watch it all come together, it's probably a referendum on what not to do moving forward.
We've got Four Nations rosters being announced on Wednesday, and I know that on your trade targets list that you put out, you said it's been a while since you can remember a November that was kind of that busy when it came to trade talks. Anything else you've got your eye on as we start to wrap up? Anything else that has your mind spinning right now?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of teams that have to do something at some point. I know, like, Pittsburgh has played a little bit better. But what about the Penguins? What about the Preds? What's going on with the Detroit Red Wings? Is missing the playoffs again not just possible or likely, but is it acceptable? And then I do think that there's an interesting, I don't want to call it situation, but keeping a close eye on JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, like I wonder how that situation plays itself out there, because that's a real intriguing one, and I don't know any other details. Obviously, he's taken some time away to get right physically and mentally, but I wonder if that all gets pieced back together as quickly as it kind of came undone.
Yeah. Okay, pal. Appreciate the time as always, Frank. Thank you so much for all the insight. We'll do it again next week, and have a great rest of your week. Hey, thanks for doing this as always.
Yeah, see you, Pat. Thanks.
He's Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk as this hour is underway, and he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable. It is a Tuesday at the Dome. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Let's say hello to Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Wes with us this hour on Flames Talk. Hi, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
And, of course, the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, with us as well. All of us here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Dome. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Gents, let's start with Andre Kuzmenko. It's been building to this for a while, but Kuzmenko will indeed be healthy scratch Tuesday night versus the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just overall, how are we feeling about Kuzmenko, where he is, what might happen, how we've gotten to this point? Just overall, how do we feel about a number 96 taking a seat for this game Tuesday?
Well, for me, it was a long time coming, and the coaches gave him a really long leash. And I get it. This is a team that struggles to score, and he's a guy who had 39 and 22 goals in his first two NHL seasons, respectively. He can put the puck in the net. He just can't put the puck in the net right now because he's having a hard time getting shots on net right now. One of the most mind-boggling stats for me from a Flames perspective this season is that we are 25 games in. He hasn't had more than two shots on goal in any game. And his shot is his best weapon. I watch him at practice. The thing just explodes off his stick. So if he could get himself in a position to shoot, which I think is the biggest issue right now, it's not that he's not trying to shoot, especially over the last two or three games. He's been trying to get shots to the net. He just keeps firing them to people's shin pads, I think, because he's not moving his feet. So, listen, he's a guy who's off to a really tough start. He's got one goal and 9 points in 25 games, which puts him on pace for three goals and 29 points on the season. Pointless in nine, goalless in 21. So for a guy who doesn't do a lot other than score goals and produce points to help you win hockey games, I think giving him a night or two or three nights off to maybe see things from a different perspective is it's just the point the coaching staff is at, and I think it could be good for the player as well.
Yeah, I think long time coming is a fair way to put it. You know, there's certainly no accusing Ryan Huska and the Flames coaching staff of not giving Andre Kuzmenko a whole lot of time to sort himself out. And, you know, quite frankly, he hasn't had a lot of success with it. You know, as you said, his greatest strength is shooting the puck and producing offense. Well, he hasn't been doing that. He, you know, one of his greatest strengths is his ability to impact a power play. Well, the recent surge in power play success hasn't had a whole lot to do with Andre Kuzmenko. And so the way I put it yesterday on Flames Talk is that he's very much a square peg in Ryan Huska's system. He doesn't play the style of hockey that I think Ryan Huska's ideal player plays. He doesn't bring the traits that fit how Ryan Huska wants his Flames team to play the game. And if that is the case, the way that the coach is going to, I guess, you know, look past that is by producing. You know, he'll put up with some defensive deficiencies if you're putting the puck in the net at the other end. Well, that hasn't been the case. And so, you know, I think as you brainstorm ways to get Kuzmenko going, oh, well, what line could we put him on? What could we do with him? Could we move him out of the net front on the power play, try him in a new spot? You know, next on that list, unfortunately for the player, is healthy scratch.
I mean, at this point, had to try doing something because for a number of different reasons. I mean, from the player's standpoint, it hasn't been working. Nine games without a point, one game in 25 that we've seen so far this year, one goal, rather, in 25 that he's scored so far this year. And they also, they're not scoring as a team, so They need to have guys that can help them score. And I'm not suggesting that Walker Dewar and Jacob Pelche are going to come into the lineup Tuesday night and be massive needle movers, but like got to do something different. And a guy who has had so little impact on games way too often, yeah, I think a game or two on the sidelines is really important. And the other thing, Wilsey, is that you also want to see if you can wake him up a little bit. You also, you still know, as you said, you still know his shot is a volatile and very impressive weapon when he uses it. And you still have a high-end level of skill. You've still got a guy that is an extremely dynamic player when he is feeling it. You want to still see if you can get that out of him as well. So I think for so many different reasons, scratching this player is something, as you said, that was a long time coming, something that needs to happen. And now it's up to him to respond the right way to it. He's got to respond and take this not as an insult, not as something that's going to get him down, but something that's going to fire him up and be a far more effective player here going forward, because it's been too long.
Yeah, and Ryan Huska is a really strong communicator. I'm sure that this has been a process getting to this point, and I'm not sure the player will be surprised that he's at this point sitting in the press box for tonight's game against the Blue Jackets. You know, some guys don't have to score goals or produce points to help their team win. Michael Backlund's a great example of that. You know, he's so good defensively, does so much heavy lifting that if he's not scoring goals and picking up points, he's probably doing something else to put you in a position to win hockey games. But, and this isn't a shot, it's just who he is. If Andre Kuzmenko is not producing offensively, he's probably not doing anything to help you win, because there are some defensive deficiencies there. And it's funny, because not that long ago, we had a conversation about who is the most skilled offensive player on the Flames. And for me, if he's not number one, he's top three, Andre Kuzmenko.
For sure.
I mean, his skill set is off the charts. It's not just his shot. You know, his edges and how he's able to twist and turn in an area the size of a phone booth. And, you know, some of the work that he can do down low on the power play. He's a really unique player, but he is just fighting it right now. I suspect he's probably in his head. I suspect he's lost, if not all of his confidence, then most of his confidence. And when you're an offensive player, yeah, you know, that I think leads to having a big weight on your shoulders. So maybe just an opportunity to take a step back and to breathe and to watch a game from up top. Maybe he sees where there's a little bit of open ice where he can put himself in a position to use that shot of his. And hey, I think the coaches have done everything outside of putting him between the pipes and playing him on defense to try to get him going. I guess at center as well, but they've played him on left wing, they've played him on right wing, they've played him on every possible line. I mean, they've really done everything they can, so it's time to try something new, and a healthy scratch is that something new.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're an offensive player and we're 2 months into the season, you need to be on the list of 549 guys with an even strength goal this season. And Andre Kuzmenko's not. And yep. So... you know, guys, we've sat here, the three of us, and chopped around plenty of healthy scratches in recent seasons. Like, they can kind of fit one of two categories, right? There's guys that are just extras. They're just not in their team's top 12 forwards or top 6 D, or, you know, they're coming off a really bad game. You wonder when they might get back in. And then there's sort of message-sending scratches, like, go sit and watch one, and we want you back in, because the Flames have to be invested in getting more out of Andre Kuzmenko. The coaching staff has to be invested in that, because they need to score goals. Like, they joked about, you know, asking Guy Gaudreau to help them score goals yesterday. Yeah, it was a funny moment, but, you know, the serious part of it is, yeah, they do need help scoring goals. Andre Kuzmenko has to be a guy who can help with that. From a organizational standpoint, you're still hoping that you might be able to cash in this asset for something. You know, you might... if you decide, and I'd be shocked if they decide to keep him, but if you decide to make him trade bait closer to the deadline, you're trying to get something out of him. So you can't, you know, just have him sitting. You're invested in him too. And yep. So this feels like a plea a little bit to Kuzmenko to get going. This feels like, you know, an idea to try to get more out of him. I don't think we're going to be talking about the guy sitting five or six in a row, but they desperately need to get him going, and to your point, Wilsey, they've tried a lot already. This is kind of the next thing.
Yeah, and with Anthony Mantha out, they're short a top nine forward. Let's be honest. Now, will Walker Duehr or Jacob Peltier or maybe someone else who's currently with the Calgary Wranglers step in and do what Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil did last season, and that is have an unexpected and a significant impact in the final two-thirds of the season? Maybe, but I wouldn't count on that. So you'd love to get this guy going because when he is going, he's clearly a top-nine forward who can help your power play. But right now, he is just absolutely fighting it, and I can tell he's trying. I see him putting the work at practice. I watch him in games, and it's like he's trying to skate himself into the ice. It's a lot of twisting and turning, and I'm not suggesting that he should be a north-south type of player. I don't think that's who he is. There's going to be some east-west in his game, even when he's playing well, but maybe being a little bit more direct would help his cause as well.
You can't have a weapon like his shot is and use it as seldom as he does. That can't happen. You can't have Joel Hanley and Kevin Ball and Kevin Rooney, and I'm not trying to knock these guys at all, but they don't have the offensive skill set that Kuzmenko has. Those guys are putting more pucks on net than Kuzmenko is relative to their ice time. Kuzmenko, in terms of shot attempts per 60 at 5-on-5, is last on the team. Not last and four. You can't, when it's that good, you can't continue to have that happen. And you know, as we've said a number of times, like what they tried to do with Mantha and tried to get him to think more as a volume shooter, if they can somehow get that through to Kuzmenko, that could be a real page turner. I just don't know if at this point that's a realistic thing to happen.
I think the concern, guys, for me, you know, if I'm looking at this from Ryan Huska's vantage point, you know, there's those shots that Jonathan Huberdeau passes up that everyone in the building goes, you know, he should have shot that. And Jonathan Huberdeau is going to, you know, admit time and time again, he's always looking to pass first. He knows he could shoot a little bit more often. Like, how many times have we seen Kuzmenko pass up a shot and thought, oh, he really should have fired that? I think for me, the concern is that he's not even getting into position to, like, yeah. We're not talking about a guy who refuses to shoot it. We're not talking about a guy who has had a bunch of two-on-ones and is always trying to, you know, sauce a pass over the defenseman's stick. We're talking about a guy who's simply not even getting in position to use that shot more often.
Yeah, and, you know, Megan and I sat there and watched practice at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit prior to that game against the Red Wings last Wednesday, and he stayed on the ice late and was working with Brad Larson and Cale MacLean just on some simple shooting drills. Basically, it was drag it around a stick and fire the puck. You know, no dipsy doodling, no, you know, trying to stick handle through somebody's leg. So it was good to see him working on that. And I'm like, okay, let's see if he tries to do this in a game. And I would say over the final three games of the road trip, there was a concerted effort to shoot the puck more. The problem wasn't, to your point, Wes, he's just not in a position to do it. And I think it's because he's just kind of glued to the ice, way too static. You got to move your feet to put yourself in a position to shoot the puck. Otherwise, you become easy to defend. So he was trying to shoot it more, but more often than not, those shots didn't get through to the goaltender and led to turnovers. So,
and didn't have a single attempt on Saturday against Pittsburgh. Against Detroit earlier, did have, and the game against Columbus and Detroit did have some more shot attempts, though.
But here's the thing. He's not a 21-year-old prospect who you are hoping turns into something in the NHL. He scored 39 goals and then 22 goals. He can score in this league. He's just struggling to do it this season.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Wes, Pat on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Guys, what do we need to see from Jacob Peltier? He will make his Flames NHL debut this season. He's been recalled and will play Tuesday against Columbus. What do we need to see from Jacob for this recall to be a success?
I think he has to find an identity for himself at the NHL level. When you are taken in the first round, and he was taken 26th overall back in 2019, I think the expectation that comes with being a first-round pick as a forward is that you're going to, you know, be a top six or at worst top nine guy who produces offensively. I'm not sure Jacob Peltier is ever going to be a guy who puts up big goal and point totals in this league, but I'm not convinced that he can't be a high-end checker who can chip in from time to time offensively. probably more a bottom six guy than a top six guy, but I wouldn't expect him to put up the type of numbers in the NHL that he has so far in the AHL this season. He's been almost point a game, 19 points in 20 games for the Wranglers. He'll play a much different role for the Flames. We won't see him on the power play. We won't see him playing in the top six for sure, maybe on the third line at some point in time, although he starts tonight's game against the Blue Jackets in the fourth line. But, you know, he's got a good motor. He plays bigger than his 5'9", 170-pound frame would or might lead you to believe, but he just has to find a role for himself. I think it's as an energy guy who checks, who can chip in with offense from time to time. That's kind of where I see Jacob Pelche's ceiling.
I'm going to agree with you on one thing and then maybe disagree on another. What I agree with you on is I'm also not convinced Jacob Pelche is going to be a prolific point producer at the NHL level, but when I was thinking about this question, you know, what's he have to do to stay in the NHL? I actually think that's part of it, guys, because this organization has a bunch of pieces that are either established or can fit as fourth liners. And I really do think it's important now for Jacob Pelche, a guy who's been productive at the AHL level, to prove that some of that offense can translate. You know, the fact he's starting tonight on the fourth line instead of in the top nine tells me that not that the deck is stacked against him, but that there's people in the organization who aren't convinced that he can be a contributor. I think it's fair to read between the lines and say, geez, if Ryan Huska thinks Walker Duehr is a better fit for the third line than Jacob Pelche, this kid really has to prove that his offense can translate. But when I start thinking about, okay, well, what does he have to do to stay in the NHL? I think it's part of what we talked about with Matt Coronato and talked about with Connor Zarian. I don't think Jacob Pelche's numbers are going to get to theirs, but I think if you pride yourself on being able to contribute, I think with what we've heard Jacob Pelche say about losing some of his offensive confidence and not being willing to be a bit creative in training camp, and that's why he struggled a little bit, I do think we're going to need to see a bit of a translate, or it could be a bit of a short-term call-up.
I think what I need to, or what I want to see from Pelche, is like do what he did 2 years ago when we were clamoring to see him in the lineup when Daryl Sutter was scratching him down the stretch there, and we were talking about why is Pelche getting sat, knowing how knowing how much energy he was bringing to the table on a night-to-night basis. And he was playing with energy. He seemed to spark Jonathan Huberdeau a little bit. He was consistently one of those guys that you could kind of know exactly what to expect. And while it didn't translate to a ton of offense, at the very least, you could tell that this guy was playing in a league that wasn't over his head. And since that time, we haven't seen that. And so I guess that's what I want to see, is just go back to being that guy who can provide some energy. And I think if he does that, and if he shows that he can be that two-way guy, that I do think, guys, that we'll also see, we'll also be talking about this guy starting to be able to chip in a little bit more. I will echo the refrain. I don't think Jacob Pelche, I remember Todd Button telling me on the draft floor in Vancouver that they don't see him being a prolific scorer necessarily at the NHL level, but they see him being a really effective middle six player who can play with energy, play a good two-way game, and they believe he's going to be an NHLer and is going to be able to fill that role. Well, be true to that. Be an energy guy. Mm-hmm. Be a good two-way winger. Chip in where you can, and don't get lost. And so much of last season when he came back from the shoulder injury, so much of his preseason and training camp, he was lost. He wasn't a factor. Be a factor when you're on the ice. That's what it comes down to for Pelche, because I do, as much as there may be some skepticism as to whether or not he can fill a full-time role in the NHL, even internally in the organization, they still want it to work, and they still are hoping that it works. So they're going to give him the benefit of the doubt if it looks like it is working. So that's what it comes down to for me.
One thing he definitely brings is energy. And quite frankly, I think the Flames could use some energy right now. I mean, as Ryan Huska pointed out to us when we had our chat with him this morning, the Flames just played 15 games in 30 days in the month of November with a lot of travel mixed in there. And I can tell you that I was gassed. I'm still kind of gassed coming home from that road trip. And I'm guessing the players were as well. And it didn't look like they had a lot of energy in any of the four games they played on that road trip in Ottawa, Detroit, Columbus, and Pittsburgh. So Jacob Pelletier is a ball full of energy on the ice and off the ice. I think that his addition will bring some energy to the dressing room and to the bench, and you hope to see that energy on the ice. The other thing that he has to do is stay healthy, because I think there have been two or three instances in his career where it looked like he was starting to gain some traction in the NHL, and then he got hurt. That's hard for a young, developing player. So I'm not saying go up there and play not to get hurt, but find a way to stay healthy and give yourself a chance to show people who you are in this league.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's our Daily Flames Roundtable. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers this hour in the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.